piece of feces and that we cannot have him as a candidate and that Romney has no clear way out except that maybe, just maybe, he knows a person with the initials MBFR. Mittens, backstabbing, freaking Romney, hint, hint, who could take over the plane for the unconscious pilot at the last minute and land it safely. Yet instead of getting a hero's welcome, Mitt has been roundly criticized for his idiotic exposing himself as the imbecile he really is. And unfortunately, simply calling someone else a fraud and a con artist does not establish one's own bona fides campaign or would-be status as a used-to-be political presidential candidate. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, we had a spirited debate which Drudge measured as having been won by Trump by about 70%. Rubio distinguished himself as an insult machine. The Donald defended the dimensions of his genitalia, and Cruz sounded okay at times after refusing to answer many questions. Kasich, he merely sounded vice presidential. Well, how will this crazy political crack up all unfold? Stay tuned, sports fans. Kelly here, of course, and whoo, man, the last 24 hours have been an unbelievable political roller coaster. And you heard me right. You heard me right when I said that Mitt Romney got up and he gave a speech on how terrible Donald Trump was and what a fraud and con artist he was. And then although he had no, and as you recall, Mitt Romney, if you have been living in Paraguay, just moved back. He ran for president last time and was not only defeated, but he was defeated in a campaign that a lot of people felt he could have won if he had just used a little bit more gumption, a little bit more stick-to-itiveness, taken a few more risks. And now, for reasons that I truly are beyond me, other than to say that I guess Mitt Romney sees himself as a party loyalist and as a person who, I don't know. I mean, I can't imagine anybody doing what Mitt Romney did. So... But anyway, he got up and gave this speech where he just trashed, I mean, totally trashed Trump. And Trump has supported this guy in the past and, I mean, recent past. And I think that we saw a level of a lack of loyalty and viciousness and realistically speaking, a lack of common sense in Mitt Romney that it was truly astounding and jaw-dropping. And, you know, I don't know what the GOP thinks it's doing. It's obviously lost its way a long time ago, which is why Donald Trump is here. But the notion that the last presidential candidate is going to rise from the grave and come back and destroy Donald Trump and then take his spot is just absolutely insane. I mean, maybe that stuff happens in a banana dictatorship, but it just doesn't happen here. And, you know, what people are going to remember about Mitt Romney is not his statesmanlike presence or having led Massachusetts or even having invented Obamacare in his own way. They're going to remember him, in my opinion, as a backstabber, as an ungrateful opportunist who is really out of his mind. I think that even if all of the charges against Trump were true, I don't see how this would ever work out well for Mitt Romney because it just makes him seem like a person whose only commitment is to himself and he's an opportunist. And he's going to get up and he's going to feed on somebody else's carcass who he presented to this person in the past as being his friend. And then he's going to use that, strengthened by that, as a ghoul, as a zombie, as a political zombie, and come back in the race and win it. That's impossible. In my opinion, if he was such a great candidate, he wouldn't have been asked to not run this time. If he was such a great candidate, he would have won last time. If he was such a great candidate, he wouldn't openly display a total lack of gratitude and common sense. But anyway, here's Mitt's attack against the Donald. And I talked to some people who were absolutely apoplectic over this thing that Romney has done and said that they hated his guts. They absolutely hated his guts for doing this, and that this caused them to be more in favor of Trump simply because of this piling, this continual piling on and cheap-shotting of Donald. Is in, and the fact that it's being led by the top of the party makes people so over the GOP. But here's Romney coming after the guy who had helped him last time, gave him money, gave him national support.
I understand the anger Americans feel today. In the past, our presidents have channeled that anger and forged it into resolve, into endurance and high purpose, and into the will to defeat the enemies of freedom. Our anger was transformed into energy directed for good. Mr. Trump is directing our anger for less than noble purposes. He creates scapegoats of Muslims and Mexican immigrants. He calls for the use of torture. He calls for killing the innocent children and family members of terrorists. He cheers assaults on protesters. He applauds the prospect of twisting the Constitution to limit First Amendment freedom of the press. This is the very anger that has led other nations into the abyss. Here's what I know. Donald Trump is a phony, a fraud. His promises are as worthless as a degree from Trump University. He's playing the members of the American public for suckers. He gets a free ride to the White House, and all we get is a lousy hat.
This guy is pathetic. I'm sorry. I mean, this is the thing that captured my attention when I heard that this guy was coming back to number one, he's only about the party, but he's really only about himself. He only cares about himself. But number two, he really thinks that he's somebody. He's not last cycle's failed presidential candidate. He's a true leader. To put it in Donna's words, he's a statesman. And gosh dang it, he's going to come back on a white horse like the old Mormon prophecy and come back and he's going to save America. And he just sounds so pathetic. Here's another clip from Romney.
Now, I know that some people want this race to be over. They look at history and say a trend like Mr. Trump's isn't going to be stopped. Perhaps. But the rules of political history have pretty much all been shredded during this campaign. If the other candidates can find some common ground, I believe we can nominate a person who can win the general election and who will represent the values and policies of conservatism. Given the current delegate selection process, that means that I'd vote for Marco Rubio in Florida and for John Kasich in Ohio and for Ted Cruz or whichever one of the other two contenders has the best chance of beating Mr. Trump in a given state. Now, let me turn to national security.
All right, so to me, that doesn't even make any sense. We've got a divided political, All right, I don't even understand this idea that you would to work this problem out, the supposed Trump problem. You would go to the state where the person is from and you'd vote for that person. How does that solve anything? All it does is create a brokered convention. And then, in my opinion, the reason that Romney is bringing that up is to insert himself into the process because he sees himself as a statesman. He sees himself as a leader, a person of national stature. And what he doesn't realize is people deeply resent the fact that he lost the last campaign when Obama was so weak, and that when he got into the campaign and when he went into the debate and pounded, he absolutely pounded Obama, and instead of coming in and stepping on his neck and putting him out of his misery, he backed off. And in that last month, when everybody was hoping and praying this guy would pull it out, he just, you know, it's like Trump said, he just disappeared. So who is this guy? I mean, in a sense, if not for Romney, I mean, Romney should be running for his second term right now. So for him, and for him, when he couldn't beat a weakened candidate whose only real accomplishment was killing Saddam Hussein, he couldn't persevere in that particular instance. How is he going to come in or give somebody else direction on how to win? He is much more likely to give somebody else directions on how to fail, right? I mean, his achievement in life has been failure at the highest levels. All right, so here's Santelli asking Romney, why didn't he show the same courage against Obama as he does Trump? Well, for the sake of the argument, it's much easier to attack a friend than an enemy, because the friend doesn't see it coming.
It's Mitt Romney. I agree with John Fort.
And this is from this. Well, anyway, here it is.
I haven't seen this Mitt Romney. As a matter of fact, the only word I could think of is irony. And I'll tell you where my mind is going. You recall that on September 11, 2012, our consulate in Benghazi was attacked. There was a debate 5 weeks later on CNN. The moderator was Candy Crowley. And basically, she did something I've never seen ever in a debate ever. She inserted herself to stand up for the president and how he labeled what happened that night. Romney did not show this kind of courage, because if he would have walked off the stage like a Donald Trump would have done, he'd probably be president today. So I guess I'm a little lost that all of a sudden he has a courage that he didn't display at a time where the vice president, Biden, and the current president, Barack Obama's, partially were elected because of the following statement: GM is alive and bin Laden is dead. It was all about terrorism. And Mitt Romney, if you'd have had that courage that day, would have most likely won.
Rick?
That's what I don't get. Yeah.
Hey, Rick, it's Harwood. I just want to know what you think of the substance of what Romney had to say. Do you agree with his critique, or do you think it's wrong?
Well, let me phrase it this way. I think a lot of the things he said are grounded in truth. But I also think in his argument against Trump and the positives of other Republicans, my comment would be, what have they done that should make voters think that Mr. Trump and all his verbiage is going to not do something, or his foibles, when they have been in power, okay? He brought up John McCain. Did he win? Did he win? Okay? I think that he is missing this. It's not necessarily what Trump says. It's what people think he's going to do after he gets elected, and that is things that are actionable. Now, we can debate what that is, and I'm not going to tell you if I'm in favor or I'm against. I'm just saying that the political landscape that Mitt Romney is painting is, in a strange, surreal sort of way, exactly why he was rejected and moderates have been rejected, because they talk a good game with high character and high morals, but they deliver zero.
All right. And I not only agree with that, I am just, you know, the Republican Party is such a disaster, but I mean, they top themselves. They somehow pulled a rabbit out of their hat, a three-headed rabbit or whatever, and topped themselves with this scandalous, this treasonous attack on the party leader or the person who's ahead. I honestly cannot believe it. 523-1450 and 805-6180. Mitt Romney, you need to be driven to the same island that Napoleon, St. Helena or whatever, in the middle of nowhere, and dropped off there. You are a shameful, backstabbing, idiotic coward, and you have embarrassed the party. You've embarrassed yourself, You've put a dark stain over whatever legacy you supposedly had, and you are never going to be president ever. And I certainly hope that he hasn't destroyed the opportunity of the GOP to get this win this election, because, you know, does anybody in the GOP ever say to themselves, this is not going to, this, what if this doesn't work? This, you know, this midair refueling or switching of pilots or whatever metaphor you want to use doesn't work, and we just hand the really Trump is so much worse than Sanders or Clinton, and you know that Sanders or get this. Romney is claiming that, and that's all the GOP is claiming, that Donald Trump is so horribly such a liar, he will do everything the opposite of the way it should be done, that to have Hillary or Sanders in there, Hillary at this point, would be light years better. Does that idea even begin to make sense? You know, Hillary's about to be indicted, could be indicted for putting out state secrets in an open email, hundreds or thousands of them. Thousands of them, I guess there are like 2,000 of them, whatever. Is it 200 or 2,000? I guess it doesn't really matter. But she's light years ahead of Donald Trump. This is why the GOP is failing. This is why the GOP must die. All right, here's an old song, an obscure song from the Boys, B-O-Y-S, Timothy, about cannibalism, which is the only thing that comes to mind when I see this despicable, treasonous Mitt Romney. We'll be right back. Kelly O'Donnell, 623 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523 1450. We're going to get a little bit more reaction on Mittens Romney and then take on the debate. All right, so the Romney thing has got me roiled up. By the way, somebody called when I was on break, and I've tried to explain this. I guess if you're not smart enough to follow simple directions, don't call in. But somebody called. I've tried to tell you before, I'm running my own board, so I can't hear beyond the music. The phone will be picked up. You'll be put on hold. The person, of course, immediately hung up on me, but just be patient. Call in. You'll be put on hold because I can't hear you. You can't hear me because everything comes through the same board. So, but for some reason, people don't ever follow this. It just, I think one person has ever followed this when they called in. But anyway, if you call in and I'm on break and there's music playing, I cannot hear you. You cannot hear me. I'll put you on hold as soon as the music is over, which will be like 5 or 10 or 15 seconds at the most. I'll be back to talk to you and queue up the call. Anyway, 6:29, and I just, you know, I am just so appalled by Mitt Romney. This is a statesman. All right, here's a little bit of the Trump's reaction.
Now, I heard, and I saw just a little bit of it, but I heard that Mitt Romney made a fairly long speech. And I mean, honestly, I thought I'll just address it quickly because it's irrelevant. Look, Mitt is a failed candidate. He failed. He failed horribly. The third debate. He failed badly. That was a race, I have to say, folks, that should have been won. That was a race that absolutely should have been won. And I don't know what happened to him. He disappeared. He disappeared. And I wasn't happy about it, I'll be honest, because I am not a fan of Barack Obama. And that was a race that I backed Mitt Romney. I backed him. You can see how loyal he is. He was begging for my endorsement. I could have said, Mitt, drop to your knees. He would have dropped to his knees. He was begging. He was begging me. And did you see how great? He said, oh, I'm not big like him. He's a great businessman, all that stuff. Well, since then, I've done much better. And now he's me, but we'll talk about that in a second. But Mitt was thinking about running again. He ran a horrible campaign. It was a campaign that should have never been lost. You're running against a failed.
So anyway, that's part of it. I mean, I don't know. Does anybody think that leadership 101 is based on this type of decision making? Like the GOP is supposed to be leaders. You know, the Democratic Party is supposed to be full of, you know, socialists and leftists and people that think emotionally, and the GOP is supposedly full of leaders, and it's just like I was so astounded that they did this, but it's along the same lines. We can't run somebody that will win, but if a person comes up on their own who could win, we're going to destroy them because they're not our person. Here's a little more from Trump.
So that's really the thing. So with Mitt, I just wanted to tell you that he came out. It was very nasty. I mean, I thought he was a better person than that. I did help him. I raised money for his campaign. I actually had two fundraisers for him. In fact, the first fundraiser was so successful that we had the second one that same day. His wife was a lovely woman, by the way, a really lovely woman. She came up. We had a fundraiser in my apartment at Trump Tower. And it was so oversubscribed. I did a great job. They couldn't have cared less about him. In fact, a lot. Donald, he's a stiff. He's not going to win. I said, oh, he'll be fine. He's a stiff. I should have listened to the guy. But we had a fundraiser, and it was so big, and it was raining out. I won't forget this one. I was raining and really raining. It was a miserable, miserable day. And the people came in, hundreds of people, phase one. And then we said, there's too many people to put them in one. So we called for another one an hour later, after it ended 1 hour. And because everybody's shoes were so wet, I ruined my carpet. That's why I ruined. This carpet was wiped out. And nobody thanked me for the carpet. Hey, maybe I can send Mitt a bill for carpet ruined, right? But I always, you know, when you help somebody, he asked me to make robocalls. I made 6 robocalls for him. Every single place I made the robocall, he won. North Carolina, there were 6 different places. So you help somebody, and then he turns. Now, I will say this. He probably had a right to turn, because nobody could have been nastier than me in getting him not to run by saying he's a choke artist. And I will say the reason I did that, he was going to run. I love our country too much. If he would have run, and even if he would have won, it would have been bad. He doesn't have what it takes to be president. That I can tell you. He doesn't have what it takes to be president.
Oh, he just proved that he doesn't have what it takes to be president. But I mean, it's just, are you kidding me? You do it, like the GOP specializes in doing things that have to fail. That's their signature move. They do stuff that's so stupid that nobody can support it, you know, and that. We'll take another break here, 634, 523-1450. to call in 805-618-02 text, and we will be right back to carry on, talk about the debate a little bit. All right, so here is one more clip about from Trump to Mitt on his statements.
Thanks. Senator Rubio.
Oh wait, that's the size of his hands. Hold on. Here is him talking about Mitt's business. I looked at Mitt last night. He's worth, I think, $200 million. I think when he was running for president, he was worth $250 million. Obviously, a ton of money. But not in the league of the Donald.
So one of the things that Mitt brought up, which I think is so serious, he said about trade. We have to keep trade. Nobody knows more about trade than me. I mean, I make so much more money than Mitt. You know, I have a store that's worth more money than Mitt. It's a store. And actually, it was funny because I made that statement jokingly when I was in Iowa. And the Des Moines Register, a paper that's actually a terrible paper, if you want to know the truth. But they called up. They said, oh, that's a terrible statement. That's a terrible statement for you to make that statement about. And the people put me on. They said, what are you saying? They said, you said you have a store that's worth more than Mitt. So let's say Mitt's worth $150 or $200 million. I said, what's he worth? They said, $150 million. I said, yeah, the store's worth much more than him. It's on Fifth Avenue. You know, it's Gucci, the Gucci store. So I said, yeah, it's worth much more. We don't believe a store is worth $150 million. I said, well, go ahead. Go get a couple of – they actually went out, got three appraisers, and they said, you know what? That store is worth from $400 million to a billion, too. And by the way, this isn't me talking. You can go check your local Des Moines Register if it's still open. I'm not sure it's still open. But anyway, but I built an amazing company.
All right, so that was a pretty good comeback. But anyway – let's get on. Well, I've got one clip here for you. Former Carson campaign manager Romney attacked part of establishment plan to steal nomination from Trump at convention. Still believe that Trump is going to win the nomination, but in these continued attacks from inside the party, they weaken his chance of winning at the general election, which is very stupid. But here is this guy looks like a baker or something. He looks like a perfect for Carson kind of down to earth guy.
Barry Bennett, we are watching Twitter. We are awaiting a response from Donald Trump. While we wait for that, you are supportive of Donald Trump. I want to give you a chance to respond to what Mitt Romney just said.
I thought it was pretty sad and very outrageous. But, I mean, what it was a call to arms to the establishment that we need to do everything we can to subvert the will of the voters and steal the nomination at the convention, plain and simple. I mean, you
steal the nomination.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly what they're trying to do. They were not going to be successful at it, and it's a pathetic attempt, but, I mean, it's disgusting.
Is it stealing the nomination if Marco Rubio would win in Florida, if John Kasich would win in Ohio, and they would effectively play the field, no one drop out, it would head to a contested convention? Is that stealing?
Well, I mean, you know, ifs and buts where candy and nuts every day would be like Christmas. I mean, you know, he's not going to win Florida. John Kasich is not going to win Ohio. Donald Trump is going to have a majority of the delegates at the convention. That still isn't going to stop them from trying to steal it. Mark my words.
Ryan Williams, you used to work for Mitt Romney. The first words out of his mouth were, I'm not a candidate. Do you believe him?
Yes, he's made clear for the last 2 years he's not running for president again. He laid out the case very eloquently.
Uh-huh, yeah, right. He wants... you know, Mitt Romney thinks he's done so much for this country that he deserves being president without even bothering to run a campaign. 642, except in a campaign of character assassination. 642, Kelly O'Connell, I will never have the tiniest shred of respect for Mitt Romney ever again. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450 to call in, 805-618 to text. We'll be right back. Weather here. All right, so here's a little bit from the now that I've vented my spleen over Romney. And by the way, why does the governor why does she throw her support to Marco Rubio when it seems like Marco Rubio does not have a path to victory? Be some idea out there in the GOP that Marco Rubio, since he's been chosen by the party and since the party has let it be known that nothing is going to happen outside of what they want, that Rubio is going to win, but I don't see how he can win. And I'm looking here, John Kasich saying, if I win Ohio, we're probably going to end up with a brokered convention. He's not ahead in Ohio, but that's not true. Those votes can be overcome easy. So anyway, I don't know. Here is probably the funniest part of the debate. Trump defending the size of his hands, because Marco Rubio made a joke about, you know, the size of your hands having something to do with other things. So check this out.
3 weeks ago, you said, quote, "I don't do the personal attacks, primarily because it's not who I am, because I think it's beneath the office that I'm seeking, but also because I don't want to embarrass my kids." But in the past week, you've mocked Mr. Trump's tan. You've made fun of his spelling. You called him a con artist. You suggested he wet himself backstage at the last debate, along with other vulgar jokes and jabs. So what happened?
Yeah, you know, Brett, let me say something. This campaign for the last year, Donald Trump has basically mocked everybody with personal attacks. He's done so to people that are sitting on the stage today. He's done so about people that are disabled. He's done it about every other candidate in this race. Anyone who's ever deserved to be attacked that way, it's been Donald Trump, for the way he's treated people. Now, that said, I would much prefer to have a policy debate. I hope that's what we'll have here tonight. Let's have a policy debate.
And we will.
Let's talk about Donald Trump's strategy and my strategy and Ted's strategy and John Kasich's strategy when it comes to ISIS and on health care and on the important issues facing this country. But let's be honest, too, about all this. The media has given these personal attacks that Donald Trump has made an incredible amount of coverage. Let's start talking again about the issues that matter to this country. I'm ready to do that starting right here, right now, tonight.
Mr. Trump, a response?
Well, I also happen to call him a lightweight, okay? And I have said that. So I would like to take that back. He's really not that much of a lightweight. And as far as, and I have to say this, he hit my hands. Nobody has ever hit my hands. I've never heard of this one. Look at those hands. Are they small hands? And he referred to my hands. If they're small, something else must be small. I guarantee you there's no problem. I guarantee. All right.
So that was probably the most sustained laughter and applause during the night. And there was a couple of other things that happened during the debate. And I mean, so the debate was for the most part an attack on Trump. And I would say my impression of the Fox strategy was to go after Trump. And that was just my impression. But here is a little bit from Chris Matthews on the debate, on his reaction.
What a tragic event. Good evening. I'm Chris Matthews in Washington. Well, the day started with Donald Trump getting blasted by Republican hawks, the neocons, the Wall Street people went after him, too. The party's 2012 nominee, Mitt Romney, also went after him at tonight's Republican debate in Detroit. The frontrunner came under other constant attack from the remaining contenders in the race. The dynamic was clear from the outset. It was Donald Trump versus everyone else. People I'll now call the jackals, because that's all they were tonight. Ted Cruz, one of the jackals, Marco Rubio, the other one. John Kasich went after his immigration stance, his conservative bona fides, those guys did, and his past business dealings. Actually, John Kasich stayed apart from this ridiculousness, especially the lawsuit filed against him by former students at Trump University. They went after that, too. As has happened in the past, the fight quickly broke down into name-calling. Let's watch.
I have a policy question for you, sir.
Let's see if he answers it.
I
will. Don't worry about it, Marco. Don't worry about it, little Marco. I will.
All right, well, let's hear big dog.
Don't worry about it, little Marco.
Big Donald and Little Marco. That was the tune of the night. Anyway, on immigration, Trump was challenged to release an off-the-record conversation he had with the ed board of the New York Times. He refused. Cruz suggesting he was lying to the American people. Of course, because Cruz always says things like that without any foundation, because he said he lied. Well, anyway, listening to Cruz is getting more difficult every night. Here he is.
All right. Donald, you could resolve this issue very quickly by simply releasing the New York Times tape. Because, listen, maybe it's right that you didn't tell them you're misleading the Americans.
The tapes were not on the subject.
If you didn't tell them that, the tapes will prove you're innocent.
Okay.
But if, in fact, you went to Manhattan and said, I'm lying to the American people, then the voters have a right to know.
No, you're the liar. You're the liar.
You're the one.
I've given my answer, Lion Ted. I've given my answer.
That's pretty good, Lion Ted. Sounds like an Eagles song, Lion Eyes. All right, so we'll take another break here and come back and play the rest of that. But there's some pretty good parts of the debate. But I got tired of all of the attacks on Donald. I would have liked to hear more. I don't know. It seemed to me, and I'm sure that there was some truth to this, that Fox News set up this attack on Trump, and then especially what Cruz just said there, it sounded like he knew ahead of time that how this thing was going to come up, because he had his point so fast. 6:51 a.m. Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450 and 805-6180 to text, and we will be right back. It's Kelly. It's 6:54, and we do have a caller. Thanks for the call. The Kelly Kona Show is this.
Morning, Kelly. Jim, how are you doing this morning?
Hey, good morning, Jim.
Good. Hey, you know, I was like you. I was taken back. It reminds me when they stabbed Caesar. Looks like that particular novel was true to today.
Et tu Mittens.
Yes, Brutus, yes. When I called in about Kelly, you had asked a question on the last segment about, and I'm sure you have a rhetorical answer, but why Martinez would have supported Rubio.
Yeah.
There was a rumor going around that Rubio may be considering her as a VP. I think she's looking at her aspirations for that position should this thing go brokered or should he get it. But the problem is what Trump has proposed to do is what she said she'd like to do, yet she's turning on him too.
Covering her aspirations, huh?
Yes, that's what I think, yeah.
Interesting. Well, he's not going to win. So, I mean, to me, Rubio has destroyed his future by the kind of shenanigans he's been up to. I mean, although I did hear some good answers from both Rubio and Cruz last night, but I mean, spending all their time attacking Trump is a wasted opportunity. Anything else?
Well, you're right. I mean, you have hit the nail on the head. I think this whole thing was set up. I think that Fox had a part in saying they knew what direction this was going to go.
Obviously. Thanks for the call, Jim. Call back next hour. All right, folks, I want to finish that clip that I had for you, which was Matthews, and it's got some nice clips in it of its own.
Well, neither looked good tonight, but that was Joe McCarthy at his worst in the form of Ted Cruz tonight. Anyway, the night began with Rubio justifying his schoolyard tactics against Trump, and Trump trying to set the record straight on one of those attacks.
Donald Trump has basically mocked everybody with personal attacks. He's done so to people that are sitting on the stage today. He's done so about people who are disabled. He's done it about every other candidate in this race. So if there's anyone who's ever deserved to be attacked that way, it's been Donald Trump for the way he's treated people. But let's be honest, too, about all this. The media has given these personal attacks that Donald Trump has made an incredible amount of coverage. Let's start talking again about the issues that matter in this country. I'm ready to do that starting right here, right now, tonight.
I also happen to call him a lightweight, okay, and I have said that. So I would like to take that back. He's really not that much of a lightweight. And as far as, and I have to say this, he hit my hands. Nobody has ever hit my hands. I've never heard of this, but look at those hands. Are they small hands? And he referred to my hands. If they're small,
something else must be small. I guarantee you there's no problem. I guarantee it.
It's unbelievable. For the next 2 hours, we'll be breaking down tonight's debate, such as it was, and where this Republican race is heading. A Stop Trump coalition is forming, but the question remains, who is the alternative candidate? Did anyone step up to that role tonight? I'm joined by the former chair of the Republican National Committee, Michael Steele, and the Washington Post, Robert Costin. Gentlemen, you can't beat someone with no one. And I saw a lot of no one up there on the platform tonight. Jackals, not lions.
Again, you know, I think that I don't know what the Cruz-Rubio combo thing is and how they think that's going to work. But there was no ground gained, in my view, with that approach. Tonight was not about doing what they did last week. Tonight was about differentiation, showing that, okay, we passed that down. Let's talk presidential. The only one, in my view, who came anywhere clear that near that and surpassed it was John Kasich, who at every turn brought the conversation back. And even when prodded and poked to attack, said openly, I will not attack. He wanted to have the conversation. And I think that will resonate with a lot of people, particularly now as we move into states like Ohio and Michigan and elsewhere.
I kept thinking of Hearts, the game, the card game. He was the one that shot the moon tonight. Everyone else was discarding. And he said, no, I'm going to go for the card.
He's going for the card.
Time.
All right. So anyway, thanks for listening for the first hour. The song dedication, Timothy, is about cannibalism. The GOP party, it's about these kids that go in a mine and they get trapped and they're starving to death and they choose Timothy to eat them. So in this song, Timothy is Trump. And they're going to eat Trump and then what's going to be left over? You know, another failure. Hey, GOP. Congratulations, you stumbled your way to another failure. We'll be back after a break on the hour. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. 706. It is. Let me get your temperatures 40 degrees out there right now. Wasn't it 60? It seems like it was colder last night. I am laughing because I'm watching this from the UK Independent. Mysterious chimpanzee behavior could be sacred rituals and show that chimps believe in God, which I think you could say the same thing about the debate last night, or more to the point, Mitt Romney. But they're saying that chimps could believe in God. Now, of course, this will obviously opens up the debate on where belief in God comes from, and whether it's a result of evolution. And so chimpanzees in West Africa have been spotted banging and throwing rocks against trees and throwing them into gaps inside, leading to piles of rocks. Those rocks do not appear to be for any functional purpose and might be an example of an early version of ritual behavior. What they're calling a cairn, C-A-I-R-N, is an ancient, you know, mankind would put up these markers for people's graves and such. As far as we know, there has always been some sort of ritual for people dying, and so that's always been kind of a conundrum. Why is this? And I think clearly people have had the idea that other people are special, but also that there's been a belief. I believe every civilization that has ever been studied, they have found what they call a cultus or a religion there, and funeral rites and that type of thing. So I do not believe that they have any history of human beings that don't have some sort of an idea of abstract thought like God and religion and the hereafter, at least. So anyway, they've got another article that they had published a scientific paper concluding the human hand was designed by a creator. And so that really set off, it is in a scientific paper, PLOS, and that has really angered a lot of the scientists. But if you've studied the human body, it is, I think, almost impossible to come to the conclusion, unless you're an evolutionist, a very strong evolutionist, that everything happened by accident, the way everything works together, you know, the muscles and the skin and the joints and the bone and everything seems to be so far beyond what sheer accident could create. And if you ever say that to an evolutionist, they will jump on you so fast and say, it's not by accident. It is by, they have these phrases, you know, it's by whatever the phrase is. I'm trying to remember it now. It's weird because they kind of come up with this these phrases that are supposed to kind of create these entities or these it's like in math, you have a formula, and the formula in evolution includes my brain is not quite working today. I did watch the whole debate last night. It's not just chance, according to evolutionists, because there's this thing that kind of developed along the way that is, and I'm shocked that somebody with a biology degree hasn't texted me or called me up to put me on, you know, natural selection, I guess, is the thing. But I mean, when you get right down to it, evolution is based on sheer random chance. So the idea that you've got all these fully formed animals out there and you don't see animals that are freaks, you know, it seems like if evolution were true, you would have a lot of birth defects and, like, you know, very strange. Yeah, you know, you do see strange animals like platypuses and stuff like that, but you don't, I mean, in the fossil record, there does not appear to be a lot of hideous birth defects. Most animals with birth defects die in the womb, the vast majority of them. Those that are born even those that are created to kind of speed up evolution, there tends to not be function in, like, if you have a fruit fly and you figure out a way to give it 4 or 6 wings, those extra wings a lot of times are not attached to muscle. It's not, you know, birth defects are not, in the vast majority of cases that I'm aware of, are not an evolutionary breakthrough. They hold the animal back. So it's kind of interesting. But anyway, these people did this. Somebody just texted me something from the Bible Hub. I just got a new book on evolution called something Babylon. I should look it up on my Amazon account and give you the name of it. But it is a criticism of the new creation, ID, intelligent design, which the people who do intelligent design they're trying to create an area of science which would explain the work of, well, non-evolution, which is, you know, it's a little bit tough because, you know, the people in the evolutionary side, the scientific side, or the evolution part, see it as a transparent attempt to inject God into the scientific debate. But there are, to be charitable, there are massive holes in fossil record. And there is not what you would consider, what the normal person, if you were, for example, and I didn't mean to go off on this today, but in the least, I just happen to have seen this story on it, and I was thinking about how this would be used, you know, how did these chimps develop this seemingly abstract behavior of putting these rock piles together and doing other things that would seem kind of religious, and then there would be an evolutionary explanation of religion from that, but there wouldn't really be. I mean, here's the problem with a lot of that stuff. Even if you use evolution to explain it, you still, what science is not real good at, or what these type of theories are not good at, is explaining how there exists out there a seeming need for religion outside of anything involving evolution. And so, and I don't know if this whole thing, since it's off the top of my head, is making any sense, but there, you know, the reason that we have religion and that we have philosophy and a lot of other things is because there are certain questions out there that are not immediately obvious to people, the answers to these. And so to get the answers to those, and the people who don't study philosophy and religion and stuff like this tend to be, a lot of them tend to be very scathing and very dismissive of this type of discussion, because their answer is what they call materialism, which I think I mentioned yesterday. Everything in the universe has a material explanation. But whether these chimps, you know, evolved this supposed bit, you know, this religious behavior or supposed evolution, there are questions out there that are answered by various figures in the history of religion and philosophy, and you couldn't get rid of the questions through evolution, if you see what I mean. You could try to come up with, and this is what people who write in evolution do a lot, and then the history of humanism and atheism and stuff, they come up with answers to questions that, if you really sat down and thought about it, are totally implausible because they don't deal with the real issue, which is where did the universe come from? Where did we come from? Why purpose of life? Why do we need a purpose? Because people who live without a purpose tend to do very poorly. What happens when people pass on? Why is there such a thing as morality and ethics and religion and all these different things are not really obviously addressed at all by evolution. So that's probably, I'm starting to sound like Marco Rubio here. I need to grab a bottle of water, but here we go. The name of the book is The Tower of Babel, The Evidence Against New Creationism. So I, you know, when I get books, I try to balance it out. I don't like to buy books on just one side of an issue. I want to read both sides so that I have an understanding of what the debate is over. And although it's kind of an interesting looking book. One of the people who did a review of it, just to let you know, if you go online, and I think there's two books in the series that I ordered. One is Tower of Babel: Evidence Against New Creationism by Robert T. Pennock, and then Intelligent Design Creationism and Its Critics, Philosophical and Theological, Robert Pennock. These books were described by the critics as being using old intelligent design theories. So that intelligent design is a fairly new field. It is meant to analyze the existence of, you know, life from a scientific perspective without a religious angle on it. So it's a few decades old, whatever. But just to let you know, if you get this, these are not going to be the most updated theories that it's going against. But you should be able. I haven't started even reading it. Anyway, so where was I? Anyway, if you get into evolution, there are massive holes in it, but those holes are not really discussed because, you know, the school systems or whatever are, you know, their theory is evolution. They're going to teach evolution. And evolution, you know, I've talked to a fair number of people on it. I used to debate it. Then I'd like a lot of other things. I realized that it was a huge waste of time to debate it because people have ossified or their positions are cemented on it. It's not really worth debating, but the average person, even from the sciences, has no more understanding of evolutionary theory than what you would pick up in a high school textbook, you know, because most people are not working in evolution. So I didn't mean to get off on a tangent, but what is talk radio without tangents? Anyway, pick those books up if you find the topic of note. And anyway, let's take a break. And I've got a guest coming in just a few minutes, but I've got to talk about some more on the debate in just a second. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450. 523-1450 and 805-6180 to text, and we'll be right back. All right, so here's a little bit on, and I'm sure you heard that Mitt Romney did a scurrilous and a very, very just brutal attack on Donald Trump, and his spokesman is getting up. He's not running for office. You know what? This guy would love to do, and obviously he thinks that he deserved to win last time. He thinks he's the elder, he's the great GOP member in the country. He's going to get up and destroy Trump. And really, he made himself a laughing stock, but they obviously Trump would like to be asked to be the nominee. He thinks that he could beat Hillary. And wouldn't that be sad to see him go down in flames again? Pardon me, Romney couldn't beat Obama last time, and he probably couldn't beat the person that Obama beat last time either. Anyway, here's from Andrea Mitchell.
Danger and diminish the United States. We have a number of people watching and listening with us. Andrea Mitchell, I have searched modern political history, and I cannot find an example of the former nominee trashing the current frontrunner in a race for president.
And doing so not in a political context, although the subtexts are very obvious, eviscerating him on every level. Foreign policy, business experience, whether he's a phony, whether he is a con man, his personal life, his brags, his attacks against George W. Bush and John McCain, what he did during the Vietnam War, bragging about his marital or extramarital sexual exploits back in the 60s and 70s, on every single level, appealing to conservatives by talking about Ronald Reagan, the shining city on the hill in his peroration there, Brian, and also appealing to those those who care about moral values, evangelicals and others who has, as we've seen in Nevada and in the South, been going to Trump. He's absolutely going after the base. This is a man who is putting himself out there as the leader of a Republican Party that is so fractured and has no singular leader. And also, by the way, calling for voters in each state, in each of the big March 15th states, to go with their strength to block Trump from collecting more winner-take-all votes, delegate votes, by voting for Rubio in Florida, voting for Kasich in Ohio. He is basically arguing for gridlock, deadlock, and I know from my own reporting that Mitt Romney is putting himself out there. He will never say this, but he is putting himself out there as the party's alternative to Donald Trump.
Andrea Mitchell, who is getting ready for her own broadcast.
All right, so here is, and I honestly just thought it was craziest. I mean, Mitt Romney, I'm so baffled by this party that wants to go in and take the leader who's actually bringing in change, and they're going to crucify, you know, anyway, thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hello,
oh,
this is Jonna.
Jonna, oh, thanks for the call. Hope you're well. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm calling about, I think why Mitt Romney's doing this is because he's mad that he lost. I mean, Trump is actually winning, and Trump actually has a chance to beat Hillary Clinton. Mitt Romney didn't. Mitt Romney ruined it for us, and Obama's in the White House thanks to Mitt Romney.
Yeah, and he, you know, Mitt Romney reminds me of John McCain. They have these kind of antebellum ideas of what it means to be a gentleman. They're not going to cross certain lines. They refuse to fight hard. You know, Romney refused to go in for the kill in the next debate with Obama. McCain refused to go after certain things on Obama, that, like the fact that he was raised in a communist background. And so we end up getting sacrificed to these idiots. These fake standards that they have, and now they're coming back to kill Trump. I mean, it is the worst thing.
It's absolutely ridiculous. Like, it's like Mitt Romney can't win a thing, and Trump is the only guy who could actually win something.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Yeah, anything else?
That's it.
Okay, thanks a lot for the call. Have a good day. All right, I got a clip right here for you. I'm not even telling you I'm going to vote for Trump, but the more I hear about this, I just, you know, almost feel like I want to just prove the point that we don't want to be treated this way in the party. I mean, I'm not representing the GOP. I'm representing conservative ideas and whatever independent thinking I want to propose to you. But party is sick. It's dead. It's like it's got a giant tumor. And instead of taking care of the tumor, it's like lashing out at everybody else, and it's being killed by this giant tumor of corruption. And it's sitting there acting like it's Lily White. I mean, it's just crazy. Anyway, here's a guy during this speech with Romney who screams out, "You're desperate."
Social media. There are a number of people who claim that Mr. Trump is a con man, a fake. Thank you.
Thank you for calling me desperate. Mitt Romney, there is no logical reason for him to be here other than the fact that he wants he screwed up his last. So why does if he wants if he's so honest, if Mitt Romney is so honest, why doesn't he get up and apologize to everybody he let down when he failed last time? Because that was a winnable race and he blew it. Kelly O'Connell will take a break here. 7:29 a.m. Las Cruces, 1450. KOBE and 523-1450 to call in and 805-6180 to text, and we'll be right back.
Work away today. Work away tomorrow. Never come today. Goodbye, love and faith. I feel a gentle sigh as the evening slips away. If only you.
Well, it's Kelly here, and I have a I have Jim back on the show to talk about the Vietnam Memorial, the helicopter. Yeah, that I apparently one of the microphones is broken. So,
good morning, everyone. This is Jim Harbison. Yeah, the you know, I've been on this Vietnam Memorial project now for 2 years, and Tuesday was, from my standpoint, the culmination of all our efforts. We did the impossible. Everyone said we'd never get a Huey in the town, let alone get it up. Budiger Crane and Weaver Welding, it is now firmly in place and there to stay. And while I mentioned both those two companies, I'd like to let the public know that Budiger had two cranes there. Weaver had a five-man welding staff. They donated all their time and all their services to the committee. So that was done free. So what a great city we live in. We've got some wonderful people here.
Yeah. Now, I ran into you down at Walmart, and I was able to come up and look at the helicopter as it was on the ground. And the Vietnam Memorial, by the way, is off of Roadrunner and near Mission Street. There's a straightaway that the road comes out from 70. It kind of dips down. And then there's a straightaway, and right before it turns is where the Vietnam Memorial Park is.
Right, it's the lowest part. Now, those of us who live out there, we call that the Roadrunner drag strip. So at night, there's a lot of high-speed traffic on it. But yeah, it's up now, and I can say this: it has permanently changed the skyline for that part of Las Cruces.
I had run into you at Walmart, and I was able to take a look, and I had no idea that those Hueys were so thin-skinned.
I flew on them in Vietnam, and had I known then, I'd have been absolutely terrified.
But it's like there's no armor plating on them. It doesn't feel
none
like.
Whatsoever.
Wow.
The only armor plating was the two pilot seats are armor plated. They weigh 175 pounds each. But the two door gunners who sat on the back sat on woven web canvas straps. They had absolutely no protection at all.
Well, that's interesting. The siding of the helicopter itself was just, it was like a tin can.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the whole thing with motor transmission ready to fly is only 5,500 pounds. We've got cars that weigh almost that much. So
it's amazing. So anyway, tell us about getting it out there and getting the lifted up and all of the welding and stuff. Tell us what that was like.
Well, it's interesting because it's been I'm obviously a 70-year-old guy, Vietnam vet. We got a bunch of others on the team. And so we've had a bunch of us old guys out there who are not aviation mechanics, putting this thing together and rebuilding it. It's been a process that started last August. So it's been a fun issue. We picked it up from Santa Teresa and brought it into the Veterans Day Parade. And those who saw it recall what kind of shape it looked like. It had no rotors on it. It was a mix and match paint sets and damaged parts and so forth. And if you look at it today, I don't want to say it looks like it came out of the shop. That's not what we want it to look like. We didn't want it to look like it was brand new, but it looks pretty close to brand new. We're pretty proud of it. We reassembled it. We've done all kinds of work to it, but transporting it around last Monday, we went out to the storage yard where we've done all the work on it, and we picked it up and we hooked it up to the trailer and brought it back and said, you know, we looked at each other and said, this is the last move we're going to make on this helicopter. It's going home. We had a Overkill Racing in chassis is out of Wisner Road, and they welded the bracket that went on top of the pole, the four-legged strut, the structure that holds up the skids. Took them 7 full days. It is a monster. It weighs 1,200 pounds itself. But that stand was built to withstand 100-mile-an-hour winds, and so Joel Bushman and his crew out there did a phenomenal job. And they also, welders run at $125 an hour per welder. And Joel took 3 welders, his team. They spent 7 full days designing this, engineering it, and welding it. So, again, another tremendous donation from the community effort to make this all happen.
All right. So when can people go out and see this bird?
Oh, anytime. It went up Tuesday. There was a large crowd there. More people wanted to see it actually lifted up. I mean, that was a feat in and among itself. But it's there now. And this weekend, we'll hook up the electrical power to it. So at night, the navigation lights will come on and they'll go off at dawn every day. So it has a red emergency beacon on the top that flashes as warning to other aircraft. And it has the red lights on the left-hand side and the green lights on the right-hand side and then the white tail light. So it'll be pretty impressive.
And how far off the ground is it?
The nose is about 35 feet and the top of the tail is over 55 feet.
So it looks like it's coming down or going up?
What people don't understand, it looks, if you look at it, you see the nose going down, but those who understand helicopters, that's a takeoff position. If the tail were down, it would be landing. So what it looks like for those of who flown on with the Red Cross logo on, it looks like it's just picked up a wounded soldier and is taken back to the field hospital. So
now, how many people were out there when this thing was done?
Oh, I would say there were several hundred who came out at 7 o'clock in the morning.
And it was a pretty spirited group.
Yeah. You know, when it took, because it's on a 23-degree slope and a 12-degree bank, it was pretty complicated for Bodeger Crane to lift it. Part of it, because there's no engine, it changes the center of gravity on the whole thing. So it was a little scary for those of us in the committee who were thinking, oh, man, don't have a wreck now. We've put too much time in it. But Bodeger did a great job, and so it took 2.5 hours for them to make the adjustments to get it balanced just right. They'd raise it up a couple inches and see how the center of gravity changed. And then they finally picked it up. On the top of the pole, we have a big, there's a half-inch plate steel ring, which was the retainer. So when the plane dropped down on top of the pole, this retaining ring stopped it so it couldn't drop any farther. We had to weld splines on that to line it up perfectly. And so when they first put it on the crane, they dropped it down. It seemed to be hung up on the splines. And I thought, oh, no, don't tell me we made them too big. But the crane operator jiggled a little bit and slid right down and locked into place. And man, that's when the whole crowd cheered. It was pretty phenomenal.
And the power for the lights, where does that come from?
We've re-rigged. There's a company called Aircraft Spruce that deals with aviation parts nationally. And so we went to them and got 12-volt LED replacement lights. They just plugged into all the sockets on the military aircraft's 24-volt system. So we have 12-volt system now. It's hooked up to city power. It will be on Saturday. We have there were two pieces of conduit stuck up out of the pipe, so they'll do the final wiring this weekend. And there are 19 lights within the main monument itself. They're all LEDs. Those 19 lights do not draw as much energy as one 100-watt light bulb. So we're pretty proud of that fact that we saved the citizens of Las Cruces a lot of money on the lighting side of it.
The power of LED. Now, when is the official, or has it already happened, the official?
There's going to be an official dedication. Some people call it rededication because we dedicated the main monument last March. But it'll be 2 weeks from tomorrow, 3 weeks from tomorrow, on March 26th at 10 a.m. at Veterans Park. That's also the annual Welcome Home Vietnam Day, a national day of recognition. So they're going to start their activities out there at 8 o'clock, and then our ceremony starts at 10.
All right. Well, how do people get a hold of you?
They can call me on my cell phone, 928-234-1210.
And in terms of this committee and the Vietnam, the group, how would they get in touch with that?
They can contact me and ask for an individual. I don't want to put their phone numbers out, but I'll tell you, there's a couple people who are really prominent players in this. One of them is an Air Force veteran by the name of Hubert Gay, who did all the electrical work. He's been, I call him assistant project manager. He's done a tremendous job on keeping things going and making sure that everything was done. Mike Cano, who just retired from the Las Cruces Police Department, has been real active. And since he retired, he opened up his days from just weekends and evenings when he was available. We have a retired Master Chief Petty Officer of the entire Coast Guard. He was the number one enlisted man in the Coast Guard. He's been an active member. His name is Jay Lloyd. So We were fortunate enough also to get a retired Army Aviation Maintenance First Sergeant, who was a blessing for us because here we are all a bunch of amateurs not knowing how the mechanics of this helicopter work, and this guy came out and helped us put the rotor assemblies on and some other stuff that were problematic for us. So his name is Jay Maitland, and I think he works right now in our court systems Monday through Thursday. But those were the main players, been a great bunch. We had Bruce Fawnett, who most people know around here as the flag guy, pickup truck with all flags.
Right.
Bruce was really active until he had an incident late November where he fell off the helicopter we were working on and severely broke his leg. He's still recovering, but he's back now and a little slower than normal, but he's still out there. So that's been the main players in putting it together.
Okay, well, thanks, Jim, for coming on, and we really appreciate your work on this. It's very meaningful.
Yeah, I want to mention a couple other people that were – one of them is Blue Line Rentals, who provided all the forklifts and man lifts and so forth. They would not accept any money. And Borland Ford, who's allowed some of their employees off, paid them time off to come and help us put this thing together. So I'd like to thank all the community for their support.
Thank you, Jim, and take care of yourself. We'll get you back on the show here real soon. All right, folks, we're going to take a little break here and finish up on our political. Who's your prediction for the next president, by the way?
Yeah, I wish I knew. It's a Chinese fire drill. No offense to any Chinese out there. That's not my intent.
All right, folks, we'll be right back. Kelly Acuda, 744 AM, Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450, 805-61802 text. We'll be back and we'll read your texts. All right, it's Kelly here, and we do have a call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Unbelievable, absolute, beyond dimension insanity.
Yes.
It was absolutely Looney Tune last night. I couldn't, but you guys, as I pointed out in my beautiful learned liberal text, I said, you guys are so screwed.
Well, hey, listen, you know, the Democrats have this ongoing investigation of Hillary. They've just given protection to the person who put the email server together. It is not a foregone conclusion that Hillary will not get in trouble.
I don't care. They gave him immunity. That's okay. She's not going to be indicted. She is too big. She's too big. It's like companies, like General Motors.
Yeah.
They're too big to fail.
Too
There's
fat
no
to fail.
Way.
Too fat to fail.
Huh?
Too fat to fail, I guess. Too big to fail.
Oh, come on. See, now you're talking like you're just that Rubio guy with the small hand stuff. When you throw out, you know, innuendos like that.
Let me
that,
ask you this,
and
Frankie.
And you disparage people's bodies and stuff.
Well, why do you think the governor chose Rubio?
Well, yeah, I have no idea why she did that. You know, I didn't want to sound stupid and say, well, because she's Hispanic, he's Hispanic. I mean, I have no idea. I mean, the guy's going. He's going to lose Florida, and he's off the stage. And he Trumper is absolutely 100% right when he talks about he's like little Marco. And other people have gotten out there and say, this guy is definitely way beyond prime time of availability. He's just too weak, too not enough experience for him to be playing up on the presidential stage. So I think he's going to go. So I have no idea why she would have picked him, or for that matter, even Cruz or anybody up there. I wouldn't want to be associated with anybody up there if I was a contender. I would just say, hey, I'm too busy. I got to call Kelly O'Connell. I can't be vice president, you know?
The future All belongs right, to the winners, I guess. But thanks for the call, Frankie. Have a good day.
Okay, bye.
Everybody, bye. All right. I'm looking here. Jobs are up 242,000. Unemployment at 4.9%. Officially, unofficially, it's much higher, of course. Wages are dropping, though. Almost 94 million people not in the labor force. U.S. trade deficit climbs, exports hit 5.5-year low. And here is the sad thing. Rogers, Ed Rogers, or wait, the Rogers is the former partner of Soros, 100% probability of recession. So we've never really gotten out of this recession. We'll take a break here, and I've got a few more clips for you. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450. 523-1450 to call 805-6180 to text, and I'll read those texts. All right, here's a little bit more. I think the most important thing that happened yesterday wasn't the debate, because I don't think it's changed anything. I think it's Mitt Romney attacking Donald Trump. Here's a little summary from Bloomberg.
If we Republicans choose Donald Trump as our nominee, the prospects for a safe and prosperous future are greatly diminished. Let me explain why I say that. First, on the economy. If Donald Trump's plans were ever implemented, the country would sink into prolonged recession.
In other words, Romney is claiming to understand economics and business better than Trump, who is worth many, many times more than he is.
A few examples. His proposed 35% tariff-like penalties would instigate a trade war, and that would raise prices for consumers, kill our export jobs, and lead entrepreneurs and businesses of all stripes to flee America. His tax plan, in combination with his refusal to reform entitlements and to honestly address spending, would balloon the deficit and the national debt.
All right. So anyway, Mitt Romney is a much better expert on economics, but he just, for some reason, can't make as much money as Trump. But here is Andrea Tantaros from Fox unloading on the execrable Mitt Romney. Take it and shove it, Mitt.
Why Mitt Romney? Why a guy, Andrea, who's lost a couple of times in this race to the White House?
It's an excellent question. It doesn't make very much sense. I mean, look at how National Review did when they spoke up and tried to get Trump out of the race and lecture voters on how to vote.
Was this a lecture?
It didn't work so well. I thought it was. Look, Mitt Romney, you know, smart guy, good family man. You got to give him that. But the wrong messenger. I mean, it's almost like a coach who lost the Super Bowl 42-0 and is now coming out telling the winning coach what plays to call. I mean, you look at his record in Massachusetts, and I want to take him to task on this because he hit Donald Trump in some key areas. Mitt Romney's a liberal. He used to be pro-choice. Jonathan Gruber, the man that called everybody stupid, wrote RomneyCare and Obamacare. That was Mitt Romney's top aide. I don't know if he was at the speech day. I didn't see him in the audience. Also, he lectured Donald Trump on foreign policy.
Yeah.
Mitt Romney did not want to go after Osama bin Laden and said that we should attack Pakistan or ask Pakistan for permission before we attack. I mean, Harris, I could go on and on and on. Mitt Romney has no business lecturing voters on electability or conservatism. And I feel that voters right now look at him and tell his brand of conservatism to take it and shove it.
Okay, so you
agreed 100%. Mitt Romney, take it and shove it. I can't stand you anymore. I never liked you. I officially have written you off now. You are a failed politician. You let the country down 4 years ago. You are an incompetent boob. You need to leave the national stage. Nobody is going to beg you to come and be the president. You stink. I say that with all due respect, of course, but, you know, I mean, Mitt Romney, please, haven't you done enough to ruin things? Mitt Romney's like the kid in class, the brown noser, the tattletale, you know. Why is the GOP got such a plague on it? That's my question. Why does it, you know, it's just over and over again, all these stupid mistakes. All right, here's your text. Is Frankie a cartoon character? I think he's a human being. Here's one. Is there a universal standard of rationality in the logos? Has humankind just deified it because it answers or prompted eternal questions in infinitum? The logos in the beginning was the word. The word was with God. The word was God. That's the logos in the Greek. Mitt Romney is a fool. And what about elephant graveyards? What about them, huh? Well, that's where Mitt Romney needs to be. He's a failed Republican. In other words, an elephant. He needs to be dragged to the elephant graveyard and had his tusks removed. Here's another one. Hey, Kelly. It's all right. Okay. All right. So this is off the air, but on the air. All right. So let's see here. Somebody who grew up in Cincinnati. And all right, so I don't know if this person wants that read on the air, but you text stuff because you want it read on the air. Anyway, thanks for tuning in. It has been an exhausting week, and I can't stand Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney, you stink. Go away. 7:59, Vox Populi, Vox Dei. The voice of the people is the voice of God. You're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. 5-2. Well, doesn't matter now. Have a great weekend. We'll see you back in 2 days. Ciao.